Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Ed Vitagliano.
And welcome to Today's Issues. It is Tuesday, April 10th. I had to think for a moment. And Tim is not here. He's at Starbucks getting himself some sort of a latte. No, he'll be in later on in the day. Walker is traveling back from Washington, D.C. I'm joined in studio by Fred Jackson. Good morning, Fred.
Great to be here. We are at this point Wildman-less.
We are Wildman-less, and you know what? This is our moment. This is our chance, Fred. For the first 15 minutes of the show, we're talking hockey.
Just hockey.
No, folks, don't tune us out, please. Abraham Hamilton III is also in studio. Good morning, Abe.
Good morning. Or should I say du matin?
If you say so. I think I ordered that once at Arby's. Some kind of extra meat thing, isn't it? What does that mean?
Good morning.
Good morning. Okay. In French or French. Cajun? Or
French.
All right.
French.
French is a language I just could never learn. I took Spanish in high school and Latin, but French, I just could not do that accent, you know, unless I'm doing a Pepe Le Pew thing, you know. Oh, Fred Jackson. All right, Fred, this is nuts, man. The news, the stuff that's going on in this country and around the world, this is crazy.
It is.
What do we got first?
Well, we're on Syria watch right now, folks. Just in the last few minutes, President Donald Trump has canceled his trip to South America. He was to go there later this week for a summit, Latin American summit, which is held every year. It is the first time a president of the United States will not be there. And the reason is very clear. The White House saying this morning the president is staying home because of developments in Syria. Now, let me fill you in a little bit. Last night, a Navy destroyer, the USS Donald Cook, set sail from Cyprus to put itself in missile range of Syria. With the president announcing this morning he's staying home, he has stated, obviously, there is disgust, concern with what happened in Syria on the weekend with the Syrians gassing their own citizens. We don't know for sure how many people died in that. But the president reacting, we covered that yesterday. Our ambassador to the United Nations, Nikki Haley, yesterday, an incredibly strong speech in the Security Council. Basically, enough is enough with Syria. We have played with this. I'm paraphrasing her words. We played with this long enough. Something has got to be done. So we know what happened in Syria. The Russians, Vladimir Putin, is all part of this. The Israelis on Sunday night attacked a military base in Syria in the wake of the gas attack against their own citizens. So you got the Syrians, Assad, you've got Russia standing with him, you got the Iranians, and intermingled into that are Islamic terrorists. It is a mess. It's a hornet's nest. But the president is vowing to respond to what happened in Syria. Now, we know what happened, a little bit of history here, what happened the last time we sent some missiles in, over 50 missiles in, targeting military targets primarily. And so if one was to speculate, I would say that the White House, the Pentagon, is considering that, given what our developments in the last 12 hours.
Well, and when we talked about this on the show yesterday, you know, I expressed my opinion that we should, that attacking Syria is an act of war, we should have a declaration. But later on in the day when I, or maybe it was overnight, I don't remember, but when I heard the words from Nikki Haley,
yeah,
I thought, well, they're going to do it.
Yes.
I mean, it was clear from what she said, and now with the president canceling his scheduled trip to South America, Sarah Huckabee Sanders said the president was not going to attend what's called the 8th Summit of the Americas in Lima, Peru, and traveling to Bogota, Colombia. That was originally scheduled, and the White House is saying that Trump will stay in the U.S. in order to, quote, oversee the American response to Syria and to monitor developments around the world. Abe, it seems clear to me that the U.S. is going to attack Syria. You know, what targets they're going to choose. I'm sure, you know, the president is consulting with the military, but this is just the kind of thing where with a destroyer off the coast, I mean, Syria could preemptively attack us or the Russians could respond. I know that's unlikely for either of those two things, but this is serious business. I mean, this is the potential of the start of a war in the Middle East with us involved.
It is, and it one of the things that immediately comes to mind, just at the end of last week, there was a military show of force by the Chinese where you had a Chinese ambassador say that we want to make sure the Americans know that we support Russia. Of course, they were speaking more so in a theater, not necessarily in Syria at that time, but that is in the back of my mind right now because you have those implications. And then the second thing that comes to mind is this: it's not a new analysis or anything, but do we really know who's who? You know, should we do something? Do we really know whose hands we're strengthening and who we are opposing? And those things just kind of sit in the back of my mind that cause me to go, But I have to tell you that I am heartened by the fact that we now have former UN ambassador John Bolton now at the president's side. I feel like he could be a voice of reason and a voice of wisdom in this particular scenario. So those are my immediate concerns upon hearing the information you all discussed.
Well, Fred, it is like you said. I mean, it is an incredibly complex situation. Mm-hmm. It is a hornet's nest because in that part of the world, everyone wears their feelings on their shirt sleeve. There's no holding back. Mm-hmm. These are age old, you know, going back hundreds of years, thousands of years, conflicts driven by, you know, we joke about the Hatfields and the McCoys, you know, in this country. Well, they don't hold a candle to what goes on in that part of the world. So, folks, you just need to be praying. I know sometimes it may seem we may seem powerless, but just pray that God's will is done over there.
That's right.
Pray for the peace of Jerusalem. Pray that Israel is protected. Pray also that we have Christian brothers and sisters over there in that part of the world.
Yes,
there are Arab Christians, Palestinian Christians, Syrian Christians. And so we should be praying that God would protect them as well and that his will be done because this kind of thing is a mess and could turn worse than just messy in a heartbeat.
This is the kind of thing that, you know, you wonder, why does anybody want to be president of the United States at moments like this? Because the world is becoming more volatile all the time. And we talked about the factions. You know, one of the interesting developments. We didn't mention Turkey as being another player in all of this as well. But, you know, there's some interesting alliances. Of course, the United States is always going to stand with Israel. That would be my prayer, at least. But Egypt is with the United States on this. Saudi Arabia is with the United Arab Emirates. There's some interesting... The chemistry gets more interesting all the time. You know, the president had that summit, what was in Saudi Arabia several months ago.
Yeah.
And I mean, Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel mentioned in a United Nations speech that it's a new day because he was talking about alliances with the Saudis and others who now look to Israel. The Saudis last week saying Israel does have a right to its own homeland.
Saying it does, yeah.
Yeah. What in the world's going on with that?
Yeah.
But all these people, those alliances, they're worried about Yemen. They're worried about Iran, all of those things. So the Middle East, you know, the players, the jerseys keep changing there too. But we're going to be watching. Bottom line on all of this, the president's staying home. The destroyer is getting closer to in range of attacking of Syria. I expect in the next 12 hours something's going to happen.
And the alliances you mentioned, Fred, really, they in terms of the Arab states, they really come down to the whole Shia-Sunni division. Because when you rattle off the names like you did, Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, and them somewhat leaning toward the side of Israel, And on the opposite side, you have Iran and Turkey and Yemen. Well, those are all Shiite on that particular side. So that is in the middle of the power struggle for Islamic supremacy between those two divergent theological factions. It would be somewhat akin, not directly, but somewhat akin to denominationalism within Christianity. But those guys, it's not like denominationalism within Christianity because they have blood feuds, so to speak, between one another to where they've been.
Have Southern Baptists killing Lutherans in this country.
No. That's why I said not synonymous, but just to try to give a frame of reference that we could somewhat relate to here in the States.
Absolutely.
All right.
Well, another reason you don't want to be president these days, especially President Trump, he is still dealing with the Mueller investigation, the alleged collusion with the Russians on the election. And then yesterday we had a major development in that story, in that federal agents raided President Trump's private lawyer, Michael Cohen. When I say the differentiation there, Cohen was Trump's lawyer long before he became president.
Right.
So, not sure how all of this happened, and that's, Abe, we're glad you're here this morning to try to take us through this. But they came into Cohen's office, his apartment, and a hotel room. I think there were three different places. Mm-hmm. They exercised a warrant for a variety of files. But want to go to you as quickly as possible, but the president reacting to this, others reacting to this, this has to do with lawyer-client privilege.
Yeah.
We don't know how many files they took. Some people are saying it's related to the Stormy Daniels, Cohen's payment of $130,000, allegedly to Stormy Daniels, the porn performer, and to keep her quiet during the 2016 election campaign. But others saying, no, Mueller has gone way beyond his initial goal to investigate the allegations on Russia involvement with the 2016 election. So in your mind, you've been able to assess this over the last 12 hours, Abe. What do you think's going on here? What's your reaction?
Yeah, my initial reaction as an attorney is this is a startling development to me. Attorney-client privilege is one of the societal sacrosanct relationships prior to this moment. Now, you'd mentioned the fact that a search warrant was used. So what literally has to happen is that you have a law enforcement agency, most likely the FBI in this scenario from the Southern District of New York. They have a probable cause affidavit that they submit to a judge somewhere. A judge would have to sign off on that, which says that it's more likely than not that there's evidence of a crime that would allow these law enforcement agencies to seize whatever information. Historically, however, that would stop at the gate of attorney-client privilege. I mean, the fact that the ACLU and civil libertarians have been pretty much silent on this is amazing hypocrisy to me, because the attorney-client privilege relationship is one that is such a high bar. Once you have the confected existence of a relationship of an attorney and a client between a person who is charged with an offense as egregious as murder, if there is a confession in the context of the attorney-client privilege, lawyers are duty-bound not to disclose that information. I mean, that's how high a bar it is. Now, where it gets a little dicey in the weeds is whether or not their attorney-client privilege extends to the current commission of a crime, where all lawyers will tell you, well, no, there is no attorney-client privilege for an ongoing criminal activity. But if you have the establishment and the existence of an attorney-client relationship, that relationship is sacrosanct. So now, turning to the issue of Stormy Daniels, question number one I would have is, what is the alleged crime?
Yeah, now let's spell that out a little bit, because Fred had to kind of do a bullet point list of the kind of things that are involved here. Now, the Stormy Daniels is a porn star. She has claimed that she had an affair with President Trump.
Right.
But this is before he was
12 years ago.
2006.
2006, right after he got married to Melania and she was having their child together. Stormy Daniels said, I had an affair with him. She came up in the 2006, the run up to the 2016 election, saying she wanted to make this public. Am I right?
Yes.
And Cohen, the attorney, Michael Cohen, paid her $130,000. He's admitted that he paid it, said candidate Trump did not know about it. Cohen was paying the money because her making that accusation just before the election would torpedo his campaign. Cohen says, I'll pay you hush money. You've got to sign a non-disclosure agreement. Mm-hmm. You can't talk about it. Now she's saying, well, this non-disclosure agreement was not valid because President Trump himself didn't sign it. This is the way this is all laid out. So now the Mueller team, with absolutely no tie to the original purpose of the special counsel, which was to investigate possible collusion between the Trump campaign / administration and Russia, is now investigating the claim of a porn star and hush money. So is there a crime? Is there a crime in view to pay hush money before an election?
No. I mean, again, salacious affairs, that stuff is sinful, it's wicked, it's disgusting. I don't want anybody to misconstrue me as saying that. But in terms of the law, if you have a person who accepts money in exchange for an agreement that they willingly and voluntarily enter, that is not a criminal offense. And in fact, it happens every day. Let me give you an example. You have lawsuits filed on a daily basis. Let's say a lawsuit against a corporation for something. The corporation says, we want to settle.
Right.
We will pay you X amount of dollars to settle this lawsuit. But in order to settle it, we're going to require you as a plaintiff to sign a non-disclosure agreement. It happens every day. That there's nothing criminal.
So then how in the world did Mueller's team get a judge to sign off on a warrant to go into the attorney's office, and not just his office, but a total of three different places,
his home,
to seize documents
that
basically severs the attorney-client privilege?
That is the $10 billion question. I would love to see the probable cause affidavit, to see what is alleged as the particular crime that could have been committed and what are the facts that are specified and articulated in that probable cause affidavit that would cause a judge to sign it. Now, what I suspect is that there's a judge who doesn't like President Trump.
Right.
No.
In New York, who is more than willing to expand his understanding of probable cause in order to be a participant in the Get Trump agenda.
Now, we have some comedy, because I know that Alan Dershowitz, for example, now he's a liberal. He's a Democrat for years. Mm-hmm. He is a sold-out liberal, but he's a liberal in the more classical vein. Mm-hmm. He has been warning about this Mueller investigation for a long time. He's very concerned that we are now weaponizing the federal government and some of the powers of, like, the special counsel. We're now weaponizing politics to go after our opponents. What did he had something to say about this?
He was on Sean Hannity last night. Cut number six, Brent.
Look, this is a very dangerous day today for lawyer-client relations. I deal with clients all the time. I tell them on my word of honor that what you tell me is sacrosanct. And now they say, just based on probable cause, even though this was cooperation with Cohen, they can burst into the office, grab all the computers, and then give it to another FBI agent and say, you're the firewall. We want you now to read all these confidential communications. If this were Hillary Clinton being investigated and they went into her lawyer's office, the ACLU would be on every television station in America, jumping up and down. The deafening silence of the ACLU and civil libertarians about the intrusion into the lawyer-client confidentiality is really appalling.
Well, that let me say, what he said at the end, and this is the scary part, folks. We're talking about the survival of our republic, not just this one incident.
Yes,
I'm just saying the fact that groups like the ACLU and other civil libertarians are willing to keep their mouths shut for politics
yes.
and for political gain yeah. is a very frightening game, because it means that ethics, it means that standards, it means that principles are all secondary to winning. And here's the threat. Two sides can play that game.
That's right. And so what happens when the shoe is on the other foot? And just to kind of put this in historical context, one of the things that the founders did in providing for us the Bill of Rights is that we had a unique and distinct system of laws as contrasted with the most immediate system of laws that the founders were submitted to, which was the legal structure under England. In America, the party with the authority to charge someone with a crime has the exclusive burden of proving that crime. That would be the prosecutorial agency. That would be the government, okay? They cannot compel you as a citizen to testify against yourself, to intrude upon your attorney-client privilege, to extract information that is not lawfully obtained in order to prove their crime. In England, it's the opposite. The charging party, the government, the crown, would say, Abraham Hamilton, you are charged with this crime. Now prove you didn't do it. In America, we say, okay, government, you're saying I'm guilty of a crime? Prove that I did. It's the exact opposite. It's that Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination that allows defendants who are charged with crimes to say, you know what? I don't believe the government has enough evidence to convict me. So I don't have to take the stand and testify in my own behalf. What we have happening here is that the federal government saying that, because remember, Michael Cohen was already cooperating
yeah.
with the Mueller investigation. Everything that they wanted from him that was legally obtainable, he was offering to them. What the FBI is now saying is that, well, that's not enough. We want the stuff that you haven't given us,
yeah.
which resulted in them intruding on that attorney-client privilege, possibly procuring documents that don't even pertain to President Trump.
Well, and
this
and
is a bad day for our republic, folks.
Absolutely. And I'm just thinking, sitting in President Trump's chair right now, as a backdrop to all of this, it's the Peter Strzok, Lisa Page, the FBI agents who we know hated Donald Trump,
right.
who were in charge of the Hillary Clinton. Peter Strzok was the lead person in the FBI investigating Hillary Clinton. He loved Hillary Clinton, thought she should win. We know that from the text messages they exchanged. Andrew McCabe was just fired. His wife runs for the Democrats in Virginia.
Yeah.
And we know that he lied under oath.
Yeah.
The president knows all this. Robert Mueller, the lawyers he hired are all Democrats.
Yeah.
Right.
So,
and he's looking into the accusation of a stripper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A porn star.
Yeah.
A porn star. So you can kind of, if you put yourself in the chair of President Donald Trump, they're all against me.
You know, and I've heard some people say that, well, there is no longer any attorney-client privilege because President Trump said that he was unaware of the payment to Stormy Daniels. Folks, the attorney-client privilege is not confined to a particular episode. This guy has been President Trump's attorney for years.
Yeah.
For years.
Mm.
And so there literally is no limit to the non-collusion-related information that Michael Cohen would have on his computers concerning his client, Donald John Trump, which predates his serving in the role of the president.
Well, we've seen things under President Obama. We have seen things now that the Democrats are willing to do and that others allied with the progressive movement are willing to do in order to win. And I'm telling you, I'm becoming increasingly concerned about the survivability of our republic, because we're going to turn into a banana republic. And by that, I mean the winner executes their opponents, they subvert justice, and we become corrupt. And this is turning into yet another frightening episode for our republic. Abe, thanks so much for being on with us. Folks, we're going to take a short break, and we will be back with Sandy Rios.
Next time on Today's Issues, our guest will be Rick Green of Patriot Academy.
The challenges facing this current generation of Americans really are unique. We have faced attacks from within, we faced attacks from without, but never before at the exact same time.
We'll also talk with Abraham Hamilton III, and we'll hear from Fred Jackson and Steve Jordahl. Don't miss the next Today's Issues, weekday mornings at 11 Eastern, 10 Central on American Family Radio.
Did you know George Washington, the father of our country, he loved being at home at Mount Vernon? In fact, he said he'd rather be at home at Mount Vernon than dining with all the princes and royalty of Europe. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. We're going to Mount Vernon on our spiritual heritage tour in September, and we'd love to have you join us for this very special time. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will be with us as we go all over our nation's capital. We'll go to the Capitol, the Library of Congress, the World War II Memorial, the Lincoln Memorial, all the places you want to see in our nation's capital. We'll see that, but we'll also go to Mount Vernon. Now, for all the information on this September tour, including a side trip to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, you can check it out at spiritualheritagetours.com. Spiritualheritagetours.com for all the information on our September tours. And we'll see you then.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Stearns with news and commentary next. Liberty University is preparing students to enter a competitive job market. They have a low student-to-professor ratio, a caring Christian faculty, and more than 550 programs of study, ranging from undergraduate certificates to doctoral degrees. As the largest Christian university in the world, Liberty continues to establish itself as both a leading liberal arts university and an institution dedicated to the Christian faith. Learn more at liberty.edu. That's liberty.edu. It's time to put Robert Mueller's Russia collusion investigation into context. So far, there's no evidence President Trump did anything wrong. So I'm not surprised Mr. Mueller decided to go rogue and focus on Stormy Daniels. Ms. Daniels accused the president of cavorting, not colluding, not that it matters. Mr. Mueller has the right to investigate whatever he wants to investigate. Makes no difference if it has nothing to do with Russia. Ken Starr's investigation into Bill Clinton was not about Monica Lewinsky. It was supposed to be about real estate deals. So what's the president's next move? Well, firing Mr. Mueller would bring down the wrath of Democrats and Republicans, could set up impeachment proceedings. So it's unlikely the president will go down that rabbit hole. But the man ultimately responsible for this mess is the man who recused himself from the investigation, Attorney General Jeff Sessions. And he might want to consider dusting off his resume. I'm Todd Stearns.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
And welcome back. Ed Vitagliano sitting in for Tim Wildman. I'm joined in studio by Fred Jackson. And we want to welcome to the program one of the favorite people of the AFR network, Sandy Rios, who's host of Sandy Rios in the Morning on weekdays on American Family Radio from 7 to 8 o'clock Central Time. She's also Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association. Sandy, welcome back.
Well, thank you very much, Ed. I'm glad to know I'm one of the favorite people on AFR Talk.
Oh, you are. And now the guys were just telling me, Brent Creeley and Fred Jackson during the break, you just came back from Scotland. Is that true?
I did. Yes, I was there for almost 2 weeks, Ed. It was wonderful. My son is studying at St. Andrews, getting his PhD in theology, and my son has four children, and so they live in this little tiny townhouse by the North Sea. So we all stayed there together in very cozy fashion with one bathroom and lots of grandchildren hugging and loving, and it was just fun.
Hey,
and of course, all the history. It's great.
Speak Scottish to us.
Yeah, I could, you know. I did. Listen, it's a bonny thing you ask me.
So now how long have they been over there? And the reason I ask this is the real question is, do your grandkids speak with a Scottish accent?
You know, they've been over there a little bit more than a year. He'll be over there 3 years. They don't. They just, it's hard to explain because they're homeschooled, so they're not necessarily out.
Yeah.
And also, St. Andrews is a university town, so there are people there from all over the world, and you hear as much just plain English of different versions, whether it's British. In fact, my son attends a Vineyard church there, which we worship there Palm Sunday and Easter Sunday, which was wonderful. And the pastor is a former British solicitor. And the pastor before that, the one that just stepped down, was a policeman from London. So you hear, you know, all kinds of accents. But if you go to Edinburgh, which we did, or out, we drove actually to the west coast of Scotland, my husband and I, you hear varying degrees of the brogue, you know, it's kind of hard to understand, but it's fun and wonderful people, just wonderful. And I've even gotten used to kilts. I think they're very cool. Fred, I think you look great in a kilt.
We'll have to part ways on that one, Sandy. I don't know that I've ever heard you say anything that I disagreed with more than that.
Well, you know, I did grow up in New Scotland, Canada, Nova Scotia.
Really? New Scotland?
New Scotland. And my grandfather spoke Gaelic.
Really?
Yes.
So you do have a lot of Scot in you.
Yeah, but I'm taking a stand against kilts. I'm not going to be doing it. There will not be selfies of kilts.
You know, I'm not kidding. I am really not making a joke. They are actually looking good to me. I saw there's this great kilt store in St. Andrews. And Fred, you know this, but they're very, the insignias are to die for. Mm-hmm. And every man has a pouch. It's like a purse because there are no pants, you see, no pockets. So they use the fur of animals, or they're just beautiful. The strap that hangs around, and then the little pouch that goes in front. They make them in all different stripes, and then beautiful belt buckles and gorgeous tams. I mean, it's.
Yeah, but now listen, Sandy. Let's be honest. And we at American Family Association, American Family Radio, we fully embrace the concept that men and women are different. Because as I'm listening to you, talk about the beauty of the kilts and then the accessories. typically female, the accessories, the belt buckles, and all that. Let's get down to the gross part of it, and that's the two hairy legs sticking out from under the dress.
Let me just say, a real man looks like a real man even in a kilt. I mean, the long socks they wear, oh my goodness, they look good. I'm telling you, Ed.
Well, how does Bruce feel about this?
Well, I think he'd look great in a kilt. I've already told him. You know, we saw one.
That's not what I'm asking.
About kilts. I think he got used to it too. You know what? Honestly, we both fell in love with Scotland. One thing I noticed about it was, as we were driving west, now St. Andrews is on the North Sea. It's gorgeous. And, of course, it's the heart of the Reformation, the Scottish Reformation. And so there are two different places in St. Andrews where people were martyred. The places are marked, like there's their name in the sidewalk and a line where they were burned right there.
Wow.
St. Andrews is a small town. It's like a village, cobblestones. And there, St. Andrews Cathedral is just it's about 5 minutes from where my son lives. He walks by it every day on his way to study. And when John Knox preached in downtown St. Andrews, you know, he had been in Geneva. He was a sort of a disciple of Luther and the other reformists. He goes to St. Andrews to preach, and he preaches such a fiery sermon in the church downtown that the people rise up and march and mob and descend upon St. Andrew's Cathedral and burn it and gut it and take out the statues to all the different, you know, that was a big thing with the reformers, was the idols, to get rid of those in the Catholic churches. They gutted it and burned it. So the remains of it are still there. It's now a huge cemetery within the walls, the partial walls of the cathedral, where all of these famous people are buried. And this goes back, you know, to the first, at least the second century, St. Andrews. Wow. It goes back, like maybe it's 400 or 500. I get, you know, what's 100 years or so?
Once you go past 1,000 years, yeah, it's.
Exactly. Well, just one thing. We were traveling to the West Coast. What I was going to say, Ed, was every place we looked was gorgeous, and every view was different. You'd look one place and it's snow-capped mountains, and you'd think, that looks like Switzerland. You look at another place, and it's like rounded hills that are kind of browned and shadowy, and you think, that looks like Arizona. And you look, I mean, it was just amazing, the variety. It was just breathtakingly beautiful.
Well, it sounds it, and it's on my wife and I, it's on our bucket list to go to the UK and Ireland. Ever since I saw John Wayne and The Quiet Man, I've wanted to go there. And Scotland and Wales, and We watch a and this I don't want to bore our listeners anymore. We've watched a I'm talking about my own what I'm saying. They don't want to hear me, but
yes,
a show on PBS from the BBC, I think, from Doc Martin.
Yes,
and it's and we've wanted to go to Port Wen. That's the fictional town.
Yes.
Port Isaac is the real town, and that's my wife wants to go there. So, and I've always wanted to preach in England and all those kind of things. So someday maybe that'll happen.
Ed, I'll tell you something funny. I got hooked on Doc Martin.
Yeah.
And this is a few years ago, and I'd say to people, you know, like in Doc Martin,
yeah.
And I never found anybody else who watched Doc Martin. They all thought I was crazy.
Oh, we
but
love
I'm,
it. Yeah.
And one just quick thing. In my son's, I told you he lives right on the North Sea. I mean, like, you walk 2 minutes and you're right there on the shore. So I slept in a place where I have the window open all the time, and you hear the seagulls just like Doc Martin.
Yeah.
It sounds just like Doc Martin. It's kind of cool.
Well, anyway, that's on our bucket list, so we're going to make that happen. All right. Listen, so now the Travel Channel is shifting back to news.
Oh,
so
boy.
let's bring you down to earth, okay?
Uh-huh.
We want to get your take on this raid on Michael Cohen's office. Fred, do we have, and I'm sure you're up to speed on this, but do we have Judge Napolitano's take on this?
And he kind
set that up for us.
Yeah. He kind of expands a little bit more about what other possible justifications might have been used to issue these warrants. This is Judge Andrew Napolitano on Fox and Friends this morning.
Bob Mueller's people stumbled upon evidence, not proof, evidence of bank fraud on the part of Michael Cohen. And they said, look, A, this is in New York and our team is in D.C.
Right.
B, we really not are interested in bank fraud with the president's lawyer. You take a look at it. It's your bailiwick. Berman's people look at it and say, there's evidence here. Some of it may be attorney-client privilege because the evidence of the bank fraud, I'll tell you what I think it is in a minute. I don't know for sure. I haven't seen it. Is intertwined with information secrets that the client, Donald
right.
Trump, told Michael Cohen. Michael Cohen has been Donald Trump, the individual person, before he was president, his lawyer for many years, and the lawyer for the Trump Organization, and the lawyer for all the entities owned, operated, or controlled by the Trump Organization. So when the FBI seizes this stuff, they seize a lot of things that belong to other people, mainly the president, even though they're looking for bank fraud.
That tank team is allowed to look through all of his clients' information?
They can look at it, but they can't use it. They can only hand over to the prosecutors.
What if they leak it?
Yeah, but that's in theory,
Well, if they leak
Judge.
It, they violated the law. But they can only use in a courtroom or in a prosecution what they were looking for.
All right, now, Sandy, my take on this is that what Robert Mueller is doing, now, I'm not trying to slander the man. I don't know him. But just the way I've seen this thing grow and grow, and what I believe is motivating the Democratic Party and the progressive, part of this nation is they just want to destroy Donald Trump. And I have very, I mean, it's a great clip we have from Judge Napolitano, and I trust his instincts and his knowledge, and I'm sure he's right that, you know, technically speaking, according to the law, none of this other stuff can be leaked. I don't think that's what's going to happen. I think stuff is going to leak because I think what the rest of these people want, Mueller, his Democrat attorneys on his staff for the special counsel's office, they want to destroy Trump. It doesn't matter if a year from now a judge rules you weren't supposed to look at that or you weren't supposed to seize that. Trump will be toast, and that's the goal of all this. What do you think?
I think I've never heard Andrew Napolitano be more pie in the sky. I think that's a very disappointing and unrealistic response. It was the FBI that went in and did the raid. And does anybody think that now, given what's happened with the Trump administration and the FBI, Comey's departure, Andrew McCabe's departure, all the things that the president has said publicly, and trust me, and a lot of those people that hated Trump are still there. They haven't gone anywhere. Lisa Page. Her lover, whose name I can't,
Peter Strzok.
They're there. Mm-hmm. You think for a minute that Trump's personal interactions with his private attorney is safe in their hands? Really, Judge? I'm sorry. Alan Dershowitz, I played a clip of him this morning. He had quite a very different take on this.
Yeah.
He thinks it's appalling. Mm-hmm. And he said if it had been reversed and they were doing this to Hillary Clinton, the ACLU would be going apoplectic. So I agree with you, Ed. This is an all-out assault on this president. Plus, I have to say that a sitting president generally gets respect and deference from law enforcement. That doesn't mean that they can't investigate wrongdoing, but they don't abuse his personal privacy and do a continued witch hunt. They have been since he was nominated. We know that the FISA warrant was issued, that they went into court with this FISA application because they were trying to find stuff on him to get rid of him. We know that. And the speculation that I'm hearing from people that I trust is that the swamp, fill in the blanks, Rod Rosenstein's part of it, Robert Mueller's part of it. I could itemize why, and I will. The Congress, even though it may not have been in the news so much lately, they're really uncovering tons of really bad stuff. Mm-hmm. And the Justice Department has finally agreed to release the unredacted form of the FISA application, which started all of this. And many people believe that's going to be really, really incriminating. Plus, there is word on the street that there may have been a false FISA application given to Devin Nunes, upon which the Republicans wrote their report. And if there was a falsified version, that is even worse yet. So the theory is this. Now, look, this is all speculation. But the theory is this, that they're on the good guys, I'll say the white hats, are on the verge of uncovering even worse things and exposing the underbelly of the deep state, and that this is a desperate attempt to stop, just get him out now, stop this. But what an abuse to go into the man's office, to go into his home unannounced, to go into a hotel room where he and his family are staying while the house is having some work done on it, and just barge in and go through all their things. That's just uncalled for. It's uncalled for. They could subpoena those records. Of course, we don't know the details right now, but based on what we know, it's way, way overdone. Just like the raid they did on Manafort's home, getting his wife was still in bed. It's just really an abuse of power it could happen to any of us. That's why we have to stop this.
President Trump called it an attack on our country. And for the reasons you said, we played the Alan Dershowitz clip again, Sandy, that you had on your program this morning. And it truly is. And I mean, Abe just left us, but Abe was describing, I mean, are we living in China or really? Russia? Now, and I think Devin Nunes, they have got to come out with their report, alluding to what you just talked about, Sandy. They have to come out with their report. If they've got extra stuff, you better come out with it right now. Honestly, I believe it is time that Attorney General Jeff Sessions does something, saying that Mueller's gone beyond the original description, the original focus of his investigation. It's done. It's over. I'm calling an end to this. And if Jeff Sessions doesn't do it, I think the president has no alternative. This is bigger than Donald Trump, even. This goes to the very heart of our justice system.
Yeah, exactly.
Somebody has to do something, and I know the media is going to pile on. We know all of this. But, you know, we're at the point, folks, where we're talking about the future of the country, because if the FBI, if the judicial system that's in place right now gets away with this, we're all in jeopardy. This goes beyond Donald Trump.
Yeah, that's I said earlier, Sandy. The problem with breaking these kinds of rules and laws and constitutional protections is, and this is how republics and democracies die, is that this runs both ways. I mean, it's this kind of a weapon. You take it and put it in one party's hand, it can be put in the other party's hand, and before you know it, nobody's following the Constitution because it's all about gaining power for your 15 minutes in the White House or in control of Congress.
Well, absolutely. Absolutely, Ed. And let me just say a word about Rod Rosenstein. Remember that Rod Rosenstein was the U.S. attorney in Maryland who signed off on what Mueller was implicated in, and Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton and the Clinton Foundation, and that was the sale of 20% of America's uranium to Russia. Mm-hmm. Rosenstein is up to his ears in that, and so is Mueller. And so Rosenstein has a really bad record. Now, when he was nominated, he was part of the swamp. Oh, he's great. He's done this. He was part of this administration. But what we know is he is the ultimate bureaucrat. And if a lot of this stuff is exposed, he's going to be in trouble. So I think he's part of this team trying to destroy the president, because he knows he's really vulnerable too. And so is Mueller. For heaven's sake, I just saw a picture yesterday. Mueller is coming after Paul Manafort for his dealings with Ukrainian president, whose name escapes me in this minute, a former president of the Ukraine. And so Mueller's made a big deal out of Manafort's business dealings with Ukraine. Now, I don't know if Manafort's innocent of nothing. I'm not saying he is, but I'm saying that, and Fred and Ed both, you know that when the Soviet Union broke up, Russia changed, and American businesses flocked there to do business. Mm-hmm. There's nothing wrong with that. And so Paul Manafort was doing that too. I don't know. Maybe he did illegal things. I don't know. But on its face, that's not illegal. But they're making it sound as though, you know, he colluded with a Russian-friendly Ukrainian president. Well, now we know. That's what Mueller's been saying. Now I saw pictures this morning, I think it was PJ Media published, of Mueller with that same Ukrainian president. Shaking his hand, and then another one smiling at the camera. Mueller also went to Ukraine and had dealings with that president. The point is not that that was bad, but that they're making Manafort sound like a criminal for doing that, when Bob Mueller himself was also, I guess, colluding with the Ukrainian president himself, based on that theory and the definition of it. So these guys, last night, when President Trump responded, I'm sure you guys heard that. That was about 4 minutes he went off. I tell you, I was amazed at his restraint. He was measured. He said a lot of really great things, and he kept his composure, which I don't think I could have done, because it just broke, you know, before he was supposed to have a press conference about Syria. So he's sitting there with all the generals. He's supposed to be talking about Syria, and he finds out that the FBI has raided the home and the office and the hotel room of Michael Cohen and his family. So the president delivers his response, and I just thought he did an amazing job, and he tracked the whole thing, the history of it, about how they've been after him since he got the nomination, and we know that that's true, verifiably true. It's been irrational, the leaks, the undermining, attempted destruction. You know, I don't know how he's withstood it, honestly.
Yeah.
How can one man take all of that?
Sandy, let me change gears just a little bit here. Let's stay with on the subject of Trump. And one of our listeners emailed us a comment, a kind of a question. So I want to kind of get your take on this, because you have a kind of a split within the evangelical community about whether or not Christians should support Trump, whether they should have voted for Trump, whether they should continue to support Donald Trump. And what this listener asked was, because $130,000, my understanding is Michael Cohen said, yes, I paid Stormy Daniels for her silence. The president didn't know anything about that, but I did pay her to keep quiet about her allegation. The president denies it, her allegation that she had an affair with the president 12 years ago. So here's the question. How is this different from members of Congress using taxpayer money? That is a difference. But how morally is it different from members of Congress using money to pay to silence people, women who accuse them of immorality? From a Christian perspective, how would you kind of answer that question?
Okay, so you're talking about that where we found that millions of dollars went to pay members of Congress.
Right, the shush fund.
Yeah. Well, I don't think, I guess you have to consider that, you know, that's a tough question.
Yeah.
And it's I don't mind the question. I just have to think about it for a second.
Yeah.
I guess Stormy, is it McDaniels?
Stormy Daniels.
Stormy Daniels. You have to consider, like, situations. Stormy Daniels is making lots of money off of this. She's not exactly a virginal staffer who was taken advantage of by a boss. She is a porn star who is boasting, as she just did a whole nude spread for Penthouse, making a lot of money doing that, doing her next tell-all. This is sport for her. And she had the potential to do a lot of damage to President Trump as a candidate. She didn't have to sign that disclosure agreement, and she didn't have to take the money. No one, as far as I know, forced her to do that. And so I think when it's, I would guess now, extrapolating, when you talk about staffers, they have their employment to consider.
Right.
Their future to consider. There are reasons why it's harder for them to speak up. Plus, it is a situation where a powerful person, has a way with a woman, powerful man. I would say that Trump, by her own admission, Stormy Daniels, that wasn't the case with her.
Right.
She was very happy to participate if indeed it happened.
Here's where I just, this kind of an ambush. I apologize because someone had emailed us just a few minutes ago. And so I'm also trying to process this. Here's where I'm just going to say personally, this is where I'm not saying this is AFA's position or anything like that. And I'll give you a chance to I've tried to be as quick as possible and give you a chance to have the last word. But I think my own personal take on this is that President Trump has had some spiritual changes in his life. Stormy Daniels is saying she had an affair with the president 12 years ago. If that's true, that's obviously wrong. The fact that she brought it up just before the 2016 election, I think, is also wrong. It is being used was being used to torpedo the president's campaign. I think it's wrong to pay hush money, but I don't think it's illegal. As Abe Hamilton said, companies do that all the time when they settle out of court with people. So I understand what the listener was saying. I understand Christians who are distraught that the president, who's in office, has apparently a very immoral past. I think it's different than if he had done it just prior to the election or has done it since he's in office. That's my take on this. I don't want people to think I'm splitting hairs to defend the president. If he had this affair, 6 months ago, that'd be a whole different story. 12 years ago, I'm giving the man credit because I think he's had some spiritual change in his life. What do you think?
I would
give you the last.
I think, of course, that's different than what your listener question was. But to the issue of whether we support as Christians President Trump, how we can do that, I agree with you, Ed. Totally can't add anything to that, except that I would say it's apples to oranges. The requirements of a follower of Jesus and a man in the world.
Yeah.
Donald Trump was a billionaire playboy, good looking, athletic. He could have had anything, and he did. He had lots of women. We know that. He hasn't really hit that.
Right.
So I don't hold him to the same standard I do to someone like Bill Clinton, who claims to be a Christian, carried his big Bible. That's intolerable in Scripture. If he is a brother, that's absolutely unacceptable. But when you look at a secular man who is nothing more than what he says he is, we don't have the same opinion. It's not a matter of we have a different standard.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. I think Trump has changed. I think he's changed tremendously. I think Melania has too. Hey, it's been remarkable.
Yeah, Sandy, we're going to have to let you go because we were coming up here on the break. Thank you so much for your insight. And tell Bruce to enjoy those kilts, okay?
I will.
Right.
Okay, you guys.
Thank you,
talk
Sandy.
To you soon. Okay,
you soon. Fred, thanks for being here with us for this hour. Folks, we're going to take a 5-minute break for news. When we come back, more of what's happening.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.